Amen. Back when I was in divinity school, I had a field placement at a church. And the senior minister knew that I had experience in planned giving, so he thought it would be good if I talked with the congregation about that one Sunday, and he wanted me to give a sermon. So I prepared my message, and I stood in front of the congregation, and I told them that if I had my druthers, that day's sermon would be part of a four-week series about things we don't talk about in church. And those things would be sex and money and politics and death. I delivered my sermon, and after worship, as I was greeting congregants heading out to coffee hour, a couple of older women who were mainstays of the church approached me with a gleam in their eye, and one of them took my hand and said, "I really want to hear the sermon about sex." You're not getting that, but we are going to talk about death. Death is something that we all, at some point in our lives, do not want to think about and we try to avoid, yet it is one of the themes of Lent, that we should confront our mortality. The truth is, every single person in this sanctuary, every single person in Lebanon, in the Upper Valley, everybody, everywhere, is going to die. Really, there are no exceptions. Now, I know you think it's not going to happen to you. You know that everybody else is going to die. But how can I die? How can you die? It's going to happen. And we do try to deny it. I remember back in my fundraising days that there were very generous people who would say things like, "If I die, I'm going to make a gift by my estate." Well, what is wrong with that statement? Death isn't an if proposition. You are going to die. Really. Now, we have, as a species, created all sorts of rationales and ways of thinking about death that can make us feel better. And one of them has been that it always occurs for a reason. God has a plan. If somebody dies in an accident, God intended for it to happen. If somebody was killed, God meant for that to happen. And that belief has held on for a long time, despite the fact that we've got the book of Job, which clearly rejects that kind of thinking, and we have Jesus saying on more than one occasion, including in today's lesson, that's not the way the universe operates. People talked about a slaughter involving some Galileans, and they thought that somehow God must have targeted those people. People had heard about the accident building the Siloam Water Tower in Jerusalem, and they presumed that somehow God had wanted to take out his vengeance or to punish or to act on those people. And Jesus said no. God does not do that. And then he went a step further and said, "You're going to die too." So why do I keep harping on this theme that we are all going to die? The truth is that our lives are a gift, that we have been blessed by the Lord with being here. And there may be days, there may be weeks or months or even years where life can be a burden or a trial. But we are still blessed to be alive. And we need to take advantage of that gift to live life to its fullest. We like to imagine, some of us, I suspect, that it would be great to live forever. Has anybody here ever entertained that idea? Nobody? Really? You don't want to see what's going to happen in 200 years? Well, I guess I should retire this part of the sermon. Thank you, Henry. Somebody's honest. So, well, that's a good point, Linda, because I was going to ask, when we say we want to live forever, what does that mean? Do we imagine that we are going to continue on at our present age? Or are we somehow going to revert back to when we were 30 and in better shape? Or do we confront the possibility that living forever means that we're going to turn to be 120 and 130 and 150 and we're just going to break down and somehow have to toddle along? Living forever is perhaps not as good as we think it might be. And I was reminded of this when I was talking with my mother a couple of years ago. And as many of you know, she's now 99. So she's had a lot of life. But her older sister had just died. And I was talking with her on the phone. And my mother, like many of our parents, is usually some strong figure for us. Somebody who somehow seems to know what's going on and has everything sorted out and on track. But she confessed to me that she was alone. She was alone. And she didn't mean that she didn't feel that my sister or I didn't care about her or weren't talking about her. But with my aunt's passing, my mother was now the last of her generation to be alive. All of her family, all of her friends, everybody she grew up with, they were all gone. There was nobody she knew that she could talk to about what life was like when she was 20, who remembered the things that happened. Now, she doesn't want to go anywhere soon. She wants to see what happens with her grandchildren, and she's got a good attitude. But when I go and visit her down in Massachusetts, I'm reminded of what she had said those years ago, that she is alone. And I remember visiting with Ginny Huff, a longtime member of this church that many of you know. And she lived to be 100. And a few months before she died, I was sitting with her in an apartment up at Harvest Hill. And she said to me in a rather matter-of-fact way, "I'm done. I'm ready to go." And she wasn't suffering some kind of illness. There wasn't some kind of crisis that was pressing in on her. But Ginny knew that she had had a long life. And she'd seen her children and grandchildren and great-grandchildren and this big family sprout and grow. And she was ready to move on. She appreciated this life, but she also knew that there was a time it needed to come to a close. You know, I have to confess, I'm not as sanguine as my mother or Ginny. I really have no interest in dying, and I will live forever, and I will mourn all of you when you go to the great beyond. And somebody is going to have to officiate at my funeral, as I'm denying that I have died. And being in the presence of someone who has passed away, it's very sobering. I don't know if any of you have ever been with someone right after they have died, but you know that there's the body of your loved one or your friend or someone you have known, but something is missing. Something is missing. Their soul, their spirit, whatever you want to call it, has moved on. And as much as I believe science can explain many of the mysteries and wonders of our world, I still think that it's got a ways to go before it gets a handle on human consciousness and what it is that makes each of us special and unique. I don't think it's just a matter of neurons snapping and synapses passing electrical signals back and forth between one another. There is something in us, something that God gave each of us. And I believe that we will pass on to a different world, a different future. I can't tell you what heaven looks like, And the truth is, there is nobody alive today who can tell you what heaven looks like. But it's real. And one nice way of thinking about it was shared by my senior minister in Boston many years ago, Jim Crawford. And he and I were talking out in the narthex after worship, and a young woman who is a member of our congregation who dealt with a lot of problems in her life and is still dealing with them, came up to him and said, "Dr. Crawford, will my dog be in heaven? Will my dog be in heaven?" Now, for most of history, the answer to that would have been a clear and fast no, because dogs don't have souls. And now, of course, we're learning that many animals are sentient in a way we never imagined, so perhaps they do have souls. But Jim didn't engage in a conversation about that. His response was perfect. And he said to this young lady, "If being in heaven means your dog is there, then your dog will be in heaven." And you know what? If you are one of those poor benighted souls who does not like dogs, there won't be any dogs. And for the rest of us, our dogs will be there. There's something about the idea of hope being invested in the future that allows us to continue through times that are challenging and tough. But this next life should not be seen as a reason to discount this life. The Apostle Paul taught us that both this life and the next life are given to us by God, and both are to be valued. Now, perhaps you don't believe that there's going to be anything after you pass away or kick the bucket or shuffle off this mortal coil. That when you close your eyes for the last time, you will slip into a deep oblivion and there will be nothing to worry about. Well, good for you. You can do whatever you want. Your actions in this world really don't make a difference, because you're never going to have to pay for it. But if we believe that God is holding out a future for us, one in which we can grow closer to Him, then perhaps what we do in this world is important. And what we do should not be done because we want to earn brownie points to get into heaven, but because it's the right thing to do. We live this life to its fullest. And we don't know whether we're going to die in a car accident, in an avalanche, in some sort of catastrophe. A heart attack's going to claim us tomorrow. We don't know. So we should make the most of this day. We should make the most of it to do the work that God has called us to do. On Ash Wednesday at the evening service, and also in the morning by the curb, I imposed ashes on people's foreheads saying, "From dust you have come, and to dust you shall return." That's supposed to help us get a handle on our mortality. And it can make us feel pretty small, but it's not meant to. We can build monuments to ourselves or to people we admire, but they're going to crumble. And if you don't believe me, go take a walk in the cemetery behind our church. And there are stones that have been knocked over, whether by bad weather or kids who have too much time on their hands. I don't know. But sooner or later, they will pass from the scene. And all we will have done is passed on memories to people who knew us and cared about us. And if we go out and we help people, and we serve people, and we love people, more of them are going to know who we are and what we've done. I can assure you that God will never forget you. And take that as a promise. So during this Lent, I hope that we will repent, and then we will seek strength to do the work that we've been called to do, and that we will know that we will be welcomed by the Lord with open arms when the day has come for all of you, and yes, me, to pass on to the great beyond.